Welcome to Medicine Trails, A Life in Many Worlds, a lively account of Mavis McCovey, a Karuk medicine woman. Our excerpts are read by her niece, Florine McCovey. This episode is titled Childhood Lessons.
Childhood Lessons. During the war years between 1941 and 1945, there were no ceremonial dances because so many of the men who danced had left for the war. Almost every family had young men gone to war because most of them were in good health. I don't know anyone who stayed home because of 4F status, but I only remember two men from Orleans being killed in the service. After the war, a lot of the servicemen never came home. Because of the economics of the river, there was just no work up here. First, there had been the Depression, and then there was the war. And things just didn't open up for about 20 years after the war, until they started logging up here and the economy got good. A lot of the Karuk men moved to the coast and worked as loggers in the redwoods. Karuk people who have moved away come home to visit when the fish are running, so the whole family would be here in August, and Grandpa would have his 12 grandchildren for most of the summer. They had to work in the garden, and I had to help. But I didn't do much, because I wasn't very good at garden work. I learned to do it, but I wasn't very productive. I learned a lot of things in a kind of dreamlike state, an altered state of mind. You recall your training after you have fasted and done a ceremony or done something for someone. You fast and pray to get into an altered state of mind, and the training comes back to you. But when you're in your regular world, it's hard to remember the training and the teaching. When I was younger, I always thought that the medicine women were telling me something. Then when I got up in my 40s, I realized that they were talking into my mind, so I would have a greater understanding of what they were saying than if they had just talked to me, because they put the whole thought in my mind and the feeling that went with the thought. The other way, if you just talk and you don't have that instant full understanding. They put me in a trance so they could talk to me with a better understanding on my part. Otherwise, I would not have a good understanding of what they were telling me. So what I had thought was talking when I was younger wasn't really talking. It was telepathy. Also, communicating that way, nobody else could hear what they were saying. They thoroughly frightened me so that I never said anything about the training or being trained to any of my contemporaries. They said that if I told anyone that I could possibly be killed, because people are killed for having this blessing. The white-dominated society that we were living in by the time these medicine women were young did its best to get rid of them. This society didn't really understand what medicine people did, but they wanted to put an end to it, so it was kept very secret. I imagine it was more open a generation or two before me. I was growing up in the 30s, which was just after they were still killing people in the 20s. The medicine people were mostly killed by miners, but they were also harassed by the army. We would be in their way, and we spoke out against what was happening all the time, so they would do their best to get rid of the medicine people who provided leadership in resisting the miners and the army. The medicine women put me into an altered state so they could talk to me better. They did this by looking into my eyes and then walking into my mind. All I remember is their eyes. You're not supposed to ask anyone anything about what is happening. You just do as you're told. When I came out of this state, many times I knew something that I never knew before. That is the way things happened to me. That lightly altered state of mind was not a trance, because if someone walked into the room, I would immediately pick up their vibes and what they were talking about. I was aware of the other people around me. I was just more focused on what the medicine women were doing. they would slip me into this slightly altered state of mind so they could talk to me with a better understanding on my part. I had been taught not to ask questions, so I was at ease, knowing that I would be told everything I needed to know. When they talk to you telepathically, it is more emphatic than ordinary speech. You feel what they feel about the subject. It isn't just telling you about a subject. They give you the complete essence of what they think and their feelings about it. The telepathic communication is more complex than speech because you know what they're saying and you know what they're feeling. Nettie Rubin lived next door to us, about a quarter of a mile away, and she was a renowned basket maker. She would see me on the road coming home from school and get me to come down and help her strip her wood wardia ferns out for basket material. I would come to her house on Saturdays because I was going to school during the week. We would strip the green part off the fern and take the little strip in the center and lay it in little flat piles to dry. I would do that all day long with her. I would get down there around 9:30 or 10 o'clock when it was warm enough to sit outside, and I'd do it all day long until it was almost getting dark, and then I would come home. My pay was 5 dried eels. When I got home, the first thing I would do was build a fire up in the kitchen cook stove and take the lids off the top. I would warm my eels up over the stove and get eel grease on the stove. And my grandfather did not like to smell burnt eel grease. He wouldn't tell me I couldn't do it. He just told me he didn't want me to get any of the grease on the stove because it stunk. I did this for 2 or 3 years with her, and then I went away to Indian school. Sometime in the mid-40s, when I was about 9 or 10 years old, my Aunt Caroline got sick for about 2 weeks, and she asked Nettie Rubin to come up and nurse her, and paid her probably a couple of dollars a day. After my aunt got well, Nettie came back and brought her 6 flat baskets that white people thought were placemats. Actually, before white people came, they were patterns that Indian women used to lay out the design of their basket, but then white people used them as placemats. She brought her these placemats in payment for the honor of being asked to take care of a medicine woman. When my grandpa was close to 80 years old, he still plowed 3- and 4-acre fields with a single horse and a plow that he had to push while the horse pulled. When he was in his prime, he was just a hair below 6 feet tall. By then, he had shrunk to about 5 feet 10 inches. That's about the time he sold the mines, too. He said he couldn't do the assessment work for us anymore. When he was up in his 80s, Grandpa was staying with a relative in Sacramento while he was being treated for the kidney disease. He was still in pretty good shape and walked a mile or so to the doctor and back twice a week. He would get up around 6:30 and fix coffee every morning, but one morning he was not around, so my cousin that he was staying with knocked on his door, and he hit the wall with his foot, so she came on in. He had had a stroke and could not talk intelligibly. She brought him a pencil and tablet, and he wrote that she should get hold of his children. He wanted them to come down. Nancy wanted him to go to the hospital, but he wrote on his tablet that he was not going to the hospital, that he was going to die today. She tried to tell him no, and he wrote down that the stroke was on his left side. Everybody made it to Sacramento to see him while he was still conscious, and about 4 o'clock that afternoon, he slipped into a coma and passed away 3 hours later. Uncle Alvy had taken his pickup truck down because he knew his father was dying. It took him 2 or 3 days to get home with the body. He had to stop in every county he went through and get a permit from the coroner's office to transport a body through that county. Now, one permit would do it. My grandfather only came back once after he died. It was like he hollered my name. And I looked, and I could feel him there, and then he was gone. I didn't see him. I could just feel him. I thought he came back to say goodbye to me, because I had not gone to Sacramento to see him before he died, like Aunt Caroline and his children had. I had had to stay home on the farm to take care of the animals. And of course, if someone had to stay home, it would be his granddaughter and not his daughter.
Listen again to Medicine Trails. Our next excerpt is called Mavis and Daryl McCovey. Medicine Trails, A Life in Many Worlds, The Stories of Mavis McCovey, was produced by KIDE-FM for National Native American Heritage Month with the permission of Mavis McCovey, John Sotler, and Heyday Books, Berkeley, California. Our music melody by Dr. Kashan Laura Cooper.